Line, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, we just heard from another Tim Kelly, Titans offensive coordinator. And he was asked, do you feel comfortable about where this wide receiver core is at? And he said, in very eloquently, yep. But I just don't think I believe him, Tim. What in the world are the Titans going to do with this receiving core?
Well, I mean, listen, you know, there's got to be his answer, right? I guess you could expound on it. But, look, I think in terms of the receiver room, you got to hope that Treylon Burks really takes a big step forward. You know, that Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, you know, kind of, you know, improves, that Kyle Phillips, you know, does a good job playing inside, that, you know, maybe some young guys step up. You also have to just assume that, you know, maybe the receiver room isn't set as we sit here at the end of May in terms of what it may look like when you're playing games in September and after that. So, but I think the approach a lot of times, especially with an offensive coordinator who's not going to have a ton of say in terms of the guys that are, brought in. Mm-hmm. I think you just, you try to do the best with the guys that you have, and I'm sure that'll be the approach that Tim Kelly takes.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. From a quarterback's perspective, when you're looking at a receiver room that's young, fairly inexperienced, coming off of injuries, how does a veteran quarterback like Ryan Tannehill kind of evaluate that situation?
Yeah, I think what you do is you just you try to be as positive as you can, and you try to find, you know, what you do have and the good parts of what you have. I think I've told this story to you guys before, but, you know, I just remember being in training camp with the Giants, and, you know, the receiver room wasn't, wasn't great. Amani Toomer was at the end of his career. Plexico Burress had been brought in, and really they were looking for another receiver. And so they drafted Sonoris Moss, and they had drafted Steve Smith, and they had drafted a bunch of these players, and none of them really were working out. And, you know, next thing you know, the quarterback coach at the time asked Eli who he likes, and he's like, look, I like David Tyree. Like, I feel like I can trust him. I feel like I know he's not the fastest guy. I know he drops the ball sometimes, but he shows up where I'm expecting him to show up. And there was kind of this disagreement about, you know, the receivers and who, you know, should probably make the team and who shouldn't. And it kind of took a quarterback, it took a quarterback saying, look, I know you guys don't like this guy that much, but I trust him and like him. And look, they ended up keeping him. Obviously, he makes an amazing catch in a Super Bowl and all that. It's not always going to work out that way, but I think what you need is you need to find a coach or a quarterback that really is seeing, like, what a guy can do and trying to do the best with that.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, I saw the story today about Austin Ekeler. It really got me thinking. I was looking at, you know, the production he's had, where he ranks among running backs. I think it's 11th. It looks like he's going to be a pretty valuable commodity possibly next year with, you know, the Chargers are going to have to find a way to re-sign Justin Herbert. It just has me thinking philosophically, like, what's the right amount to pay a running back? They've gotten a lot of value out of Austin Ekeler. I'm sure he's a little frustrated that he looks around and, you know, he's done as well as anybody the last couple of years, but he's probably not getting paid as well as some of his peers.
Yeah, and look, I understand his frustration. Guy who didn't come into the league, you know, like a Ezekiel Elliott or something like that. I mean, look, I think I've said this before, but my reaction in terms of running backs, look, I wouldn't want to be paying a running back at the top of the market. I wouldn't want to be. And that doesn't mean that people that do can't have success, right? Like, obviously the Titans have paid Derrick Henry a lot of money and they've had success with them. There are other teams that decide to reward running backs. I mean, Christian McCaffrey has turned out to be a great find for the 49ers. Like, so I think that, like, it obviously can be done and people do it. I just I want to do it because I do think you can find value. Now, I think you'll miss out on the top echelon guy by doing that, but I think you can do it. So, like, if I were the Chargers, with everything that you said, I probably would have been looking to maybe trade Austin Eckler or not give him a new deal or, you know, incentives onto his deal. Like, I would maybe try to beat the market with somebody like Ezekiel Elliott, who's had 22 rushing touchdowns the last couple of years and doesn't seem to be able to find a home in a young running back room with an offensive coordinator that's got a history with Zeke. Like, that's the type of way I would try to address the running back room.
Just from Eckler's perspective, if he plays out the last year with the Chargers and then he hits the market, I would say it's fairly rare that a guy with his production would hit the market like that. But as we said, you just got done saying, I don't know if a lot of teams are looking to pay big money to a 29-year-old running back, even a guy like him. But so what do you think the market would be like for him?
You know, I'm not sure what it would be. Like, when we look at running backs that are free agents that can't find landing, like Leonard Fournette's out there and Ezekiel Elliott's out there. And, you know, I think because running backs that have hit the market have been signed and then it's not, or have been close to hitting the market, and there's not a demand for them, like, I think it's impossible to say. Like, if the Titans said, look, we're willing to trade Derrick Henry, do you think it would? Because those rumors have been out there.
Right.
That, hey, Derrick Henry's getting traded. Like, there weren't teams that were running to say, hey, like, oh, yeah, hey, we won them. Look, when Aaron Rodgers is like, hey, I'm not playing here, you know, they're, even though, like, spots are filled, like, people are still trying to figure out how they can make the Aaron Rodgers thing work. Like, so I don't think that teams in general want to be paying running backs at the top of the market. I think sometimes they get forced to do it because they don't have a better solution at the position. And then, you know, unfortunately, because of the nature of the position and the wear and tear, the fact that we're extending the season, the fact that, you know, running backs in general have been, you know, used a little bit differently in the league. To say, what is the market? I don't know what it is. It's kind of one of those things I think ends up being really surprising.
Yeah, and you, in theory, would have Derrick Henry hitting the market next year in some form. So that could be a very interesting year for running backs to sort of answer that question. But I think you and I are on the same page. I suspect that it may not be what they're hoping, especially at the stage of their careers, as productive as they've been. These are outstanding guys, right? These are about as good. These are the guys you're picking at the top of your fantasy board.
Oh, look, listen, no doubt. I mean, look, in fantasy, you're just comparing to other backs. So, like, there'd be backfields where, you know, somebody's just sharing, you know, you're sharing the workload. Like, the guy might be a good back, but he's sharing the workload. I just think that, like, ultimately, you know, somebody like Eckler, who's provided a ton of production and value, you know, the question ends up being, hey, he wants some long-term security. Well, he's 28 years old. Like, there's essentially been, you know, only a handful of running backs that you can say, look, he's different. He turned 30 and he still was great. And he still had, you know, a bunch of production. I think that's how teams look at it. You know, what Bill Polian said to me one time, he's like, look, here's the deal with, you know, guys in free agency, it's age and injury history that are the real drivers, but then, you know, the position as well. And so, like, that's, you know, you just look at it. Like, you look at Derrick Henry to you know, the point for him. He's made a lot of money. He right now is 29 years old. Now, he obviously is rare. He's a 6'3", 250, 60-pound running back. But, like, does somebody want to sign him to a deal where they're guaranteeing him a bunch of money and then spreading it out on a 3-year deal to the point where he's a running back at 34 years old, 33? Like, I don't see that happening.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline, Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game in the Game Nashville app. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now. Tim, we learned from the NFL owners meetings yesterday that you can now carry a third quarterback on game day without burning a roster spot. What do you think of the new rule, and what do you think that means for Malik Willis and the Titans quarterback situation?
Yeah, well, I like the rule. I think they should have never gotten rid of it. You know, the expense that it takes from a standpoint of, like, carrying another guy or that type of thing, I think it was silly they ever removed it. And I think it's good for Malik Willis, because there will be teams that, and I think it's the case for every team, they have zero, you know, desire really for their third quarterback to ever play. Yet at the same time, you know, they may feel like they can develop them, and it'll be good for them to be around and practice and see other guys. And, you know, you have a chance to improve. So I do think that the whole third quarterback, you know, emergency third quarterback, you know, encourages teams to keep a third quarterback rather than discouraging them to, which, you know, is what happened with the rule. I mean, so many teams just carrying two and a practice squad guy. And so I think in doing this, there's a bit more of an investment into developing a quarterback. And I think it's a good thing. And then on top of it, I think it's probably, you know, a better scenario than what we saw last year in the postseason after Brock Purdy was injured. So, I think those things are all factors. And then I would just add, you know, with the way that, you know, guys can be removed because of today's concussion protocol, like that is even more of a reason why having a quarterback that's an emergency third quarterback is more necessary.
I totally agree. I feel like we were robbed of what was supposed to be such a great NFC championship game. We don't need to be – I love Christian McCaffrey. We don't need to be seeing him taking snaps under center. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. That does add, at least to me, a little bit more of a difficulty for coaches going through OTAs and training camp and trying to organize the snaps in training camp, dividing those amongst three different quarterbacks.
Kelly was very interesting on his answers today, because Teron was saying, like, how do you do that? He's like, yeah, that's the question.
Good, you know, question. Like,
yeah, it's because it's hard,
ideas,
right?
And
Tim,
know.
You've been saying this, right? It's hard to get three guys a lot of work.
I just think that I think there's probably this perception of, like, hey, guys are practicing all day long. And, you know, there's a limited time that you're out on the field, and there's a lot that you have to cover. And, you know, things are complex, and you need to be really good on details. You know, that whole saying about, you know, it's a game of inches. I mean, it's really, you know, making sure that the guys are playing have kind of, you know, like there's no stone unturned. And so when you do that and you say, like I brought it up, I think last week, where you say, all right, so say you have a team period where you're going to run 12 plays. Well, some of those plays are going to be for the offense. Some of those plays are going to be to kind of, you know, service the defense in a way to, you know, let them see something that it's important for them to see. And so now when you're working on, you know, those reps, well, how do you divvy them up? And then when you get to 7-on-7, how do you divvy those up? And, oh, by the way, hey, we've got a young receiving core that we need to play better. And so shouldn't Ryan be getting the snaps with them? And we have a rookie that we've invested in. And so he should get the rest. But what about the guys in a second year who's really talented? When do we give them those reps? And so it's really hard. And that's why, look, I've said it before, that you get better by playing. It's easier to get better by playing than by watching. But you need the guys that are not getting the reps to do everything they can to try to improve when they're just watching somebody else go.
Tim, there's a rule change that hit, and I thought it was interesting about the kickoff, right? That, if I understand this correctly, it's now more like the college game, right? If you just fair catch the kickoff, whether you're on the 2-yard line, the 10-yard line, or the 15, you get the ball at the 25, correct?
Correct.
So it's almost like it's a touchback. It's the same whether it's a touchback in the end zone or you just fair catch it at the 5. You just simply have to catch the ball. So I guess and they said this particular move, they estimate, could reduce concussions by 15%, which I get. If you can reduce the number, that's a good thing. But at what point do we just say, let's just not have kickoffs. Let's put the ball at the 25 and just go from there.
Yeah, I think we're really close to that. You just look at it's the play that has been adjusted the most, right? Used to be get a running head start. They're changing, they've changed where you've kicked from. They clearly have tried to encourage touchbacks as much as possible. And so, I think with that, you just have to look at it and say, look, there's a problem with this play. And last year when we at ESPN met with the league and kind of had our health and safety meeting, just as a broadcast partner, kind of meet with them and talk about varying things, points of emphasis, officiating, but also player safety. And look, they're able to track this. They're able to track the significance of, an impact of a hit. They're able to track, the plays which guys are hurt. And look, it's not just concussions. It's also, something else that's been brought up a lot is artificial turf versus grass and lower leg injuries. But it is widely known that kickoff is the play where guys get injured the most, and primarily head injuries. The wedge has been removed, all of that stuff. So I do think it's just a matter of time. And I think the league, what they're trying to do is they're trying to change it in a way where you're kind of baby stepping to make it a safer play. But ultimately, like, the end result might just be, look, it's just too violent and dangerous, and we had to come up with another solution. So rather than saying, like, well, we're scrapping it all together, if you look at what happened, I guess it was the XFL where, guys were starting 5 yards apart. Okay, well, like, that looks much more like punt return than kickoff return. So I get that people aren't going to like it, but, at the same time, the head injuries are the thing that's the biggest threat to football, and I think they're just trying to eliminate them.
Right. But, what's interesting is when they first tried to curtail the concussions, what started happening, I thought – that would just, I think it was this way for the first part, right? People were just booming the kickoff into the end zone. It was easy for the kickers to hit it into the end zone. But then people were like, well, wait a minute. If we kick it high and short and put it on an angle, they'll catch it and they have to return it, and we'll pin them and we'll get it inside the 25. I mean, that's just the thinking of a special teams coach. And that may have created some unintended consequences, right? So I still think the coaches will try to figure out ways. How do we get that average? And can we pin him inside the 25? Like, that's the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you that, like, there are going to be people that are like, all right, well, how can we use this to our advantage? Like, how can we, is there something better than that? I think what ultimately will happen is maybe somebody will. I don't know what that plan would be. But what will end up happening, I think, is the league will then make the adjustment once again, so much so where it's just like you're just forcing the decision from coaches of saying, like, there's not a better way to circumvent this. And the understanding is it's because guys are getting concussed on this play. And so you also are putting your own players at risk for concussion on a play like this. And that should be a deterrent that's bigger than whatever your game strategy is, right?
That's like, a great mindset. It seems like coaches don't think that way. They don't think, well, let me make sure my guys are safe. Like, they're thinking more, if I, I'll be promoted. I'll be the greatest special teams coach ever if I can be number one in the league of pinning teams back inside the 20. When if I just kick it into the end zone, it'll be at the 25.
Yeah, well, here's what I would say to that is that there was a point when, when things changed in terms of where defensive backs could hit guys going over the middle and this defenseless receiver thing, like there was a feeling that around the league that there were coaches that were basically saying to their players, look, when you get fined for this, it's just like the cost of doing business. Like, you play in the secondary. Like, so there was a feeling that, like, that was the reaction from coaches. And with that being the case, like, nothing will ever change, right? Like, if the guy who's responsible for your playing time is like, yeah, I get it. You got a penalty and you got a fine. But like, I don't really know what else to tell you. Like it eventually takes a while to get everybody on board. Like sometimes the coaches get on board first and then the players come around. Sometimes the players get on board and the coaches have to come around. This to me is a scenario where, yeah, I think the coaches are just going to have to come around to this being important.
Okay, speaking of player safety, like I'm sure the players are not happy about the Amazon flexing games to the Thursday night. So, once again, an example of the business outweighs maybe the betterment of the players.
No doubt. And look, I think that whether it's Thursday, whether it's a late game on a Monday night and what your turnaround late in the season is to play on a Saturday, whether it's, flying back and forth across the country, all of those things multiple times. Like, I mean, there's definitely a feeling, even as a guy who's a former player, somebody that's not going through it, there is no question that there is a feeling that's like, man, like, we're talking out of both sides of our mouth with player safety, yet talking about, I mean, look, playing multiple Thursday games, which means multiple short weeks, when we know and we've been told and it's the Tua situation that, a concussion, a blow to the head and then a repeated blow to the head in close proximity of when the previous one happened is as dangerous as anything that we know about in the league. So, look, I don't feel like it should be something that we're doing. We're clearly doing it. And, I think ultimately it is bad for the players.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, we appreciate you as always. We'll chat next Tuesday.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. And that's what I want to get into coming up next is the new rule that the NFL can flex Thursday night games. I felt some type of way about it, and honestly, I think I might be flip-flopping. We'll explain coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.